You know, the guy behind this incredible piece of music is the guy you would least expect. The guy is on the drums. His name is Elvin Jones, with this tune that he composed, 4 and 6. It's from his 1962 album, appropriately titled Elvin. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trace Lead, and we are emerging from a rather interesting weekend, it seems, as it pertains to the Supreme Court and related matters. And I just can't believe how outrageous things have become, that this is the country that holds itself up before the world as an exemplar of everything government. You know, we know how to run things. We know how to run a country. We know how to bring a country into the realm of just the best of everything. It is the best country. And that is because we have brilliant, brilliant people running it in every sphere. There's nothing but unmatched brilliance. And we see that unfolding currently in the nomination process concerning the man tabbed by President Trump to filled the vacant seat on the U.S. Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh. Well, with all of this going on, I still, you know, I'm still in a very different place, and I'll explain. Psychologically, I have removed myself from the brouhaha of the moment, because, of course, if you are a student of history, you would know that we've been here before, several times before, going back to the 1850s, starting with our good friend, our excellent friend, Roger B. Taney, who, as the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, was responsible for the ruling that the black man has no rights that the white man is bound to respect. And it held for many, many, many decades after the 1850s, 1856 to be exact. And it's the same process. A president rammed him through the process of approval. The nomination was quickly sealed. And so Roger B. Taney got down to the business, by the way, a slaveholder, got down to the business of securing the rights of slaveholders in the United States and putting into law that interesting piece of legislation. The black man has no rights that the white man is bound to respect. And further, the black man is to understand and accept this because it should last in perpetuity. There are other rulings that followed that line of thinking. All of these judges, or justices, I should say, were similarly hustled through the approval process. They represented plantation owners for the most part, and later on, corporate types, business people, all of whom owned slaves. And they were able to suppress and repress African Americans for more than a century and a half through these laws. And these laws, in turn, gave birth to the improved versions, the Jim Crow laws. They weren't as blatant and offensive as those of Taney's day, but they achieved the same result. They were fashioned to keep, to basically maintain a highly structured apartheid society. So when we got down to the wire, and then before things started to get really, really messy, it brought to mind this process that the African American community has experienced over and over and over again. This is not anything new. And that brings me to the other part of the discussion. We always forget, or we tend to forget, that this is a racially bifurcated society. And what exists as the reality for one side of it is not the same reality for the other. An African American's history, with this matter in, you know, as the jumping off point, who gets to set the laws? That history is entirely different from what whites know as the history of the U.S. Supreme Court. A white person's understanding of the role of the U.S. Supreme Court is entirely different from what history and what black people understand as the history of the U.S. Supreme Court, which is why I'm not really agitated about any of this. I understand it to be white America going through yet another permutation with itself about how to maintain power through the misapplication of the law. If you read your history, and we'll get into it, you'll see how often African Americans and people of color, generally, Asians met up against it, Latinos met up against it, even Eastern Europeans, who were not considered white, ran up against the law. And so the law went through several reconstructions so as to maintain a white supremacist order and total control of all of the institutions and the structures and the mechanisms of control in the United States through the so-called law. So when this thing, this conflagration was going on, and I watched with some amusement, really, how despondent people were becoming based on what they were seeing. And I said, well, obviously, they're not conversant with their own history of this country. They really don't know what they're looking at. They haven't understood or they haven't learned of the context of what is happening now. And worse, they have no intention of acknowledging this bifurcation in our history. They just think that history is history. And in fact, there's no appetite for history that goes back more than 10 years. For Donald Trump, history began when he came into office. He has no clue about history. But that doesn't mean that there is another history. And it is extremely relevant here in this situation where there's this great upheaval. But you notice, I just want to bring this to your attention, watching the hearings, I should say, it's an almost all-white affair. Nobody cares to know what black people and people of color think about the issue. It does not concern us, and it should not concern us. That's their view. We are not at the table. We have zero power and input. And that is because they know very, very well that they are the power elite of this country. They have always been. They don't need to worry about what other people are thinking. This is white America taking care of white America's business. Not very well. But that's their prerogative to control. And that brings me to this next point. Well, let me summarize the first point. Number one, I'm not surprised, and nobody conversant with history should be surprised at what is happening now. It is not the first time. As I said, it goes all the way back to the 1850s. And we have gone through this drama several times. In the instances that I have talked about, they have been exclusively directed against people of color, specifically African-American people. All of the so-called laws of the country, all of that sham reverence for the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court members were in the business of slavery. Here are the people who are supposed to uphold the Constitution. There was an organized effort within the court to fight against it. And they were successful for almost 150 years. And more now, when you look at modern times, of how the U.S. Supreme Court and the higher courts of the country have effectively emasculated the rights of people of color who still are engaged in one way or another in struggles for freedom and justice and equality. They've done all kinds of end runs around it. We now have the blatant expression of the sponsored justice. People in business of great power and wealth get to hire these justices to get done what they want to get done. Has nothing to do with what's right, what's wrong, what's justice. It has reached a point where, well, it's past the point, where people, especially those people that I'm talking about with a unique experience and history with the U.S. Supreme Court, there's no reason to believe that this institution actually intends, as an institution, as a collective, to straighten out some of these wrinkles that we have had in our society that over time has cost hundreds of thousands of lives and put out the light that belongs and belonged to people who had fought so hard for it. I talk to people all the time about maintaining a consciousness that there is no one history about anything in this country. You're talking U.S. Supreme Court, you by necessity have to talk about the function of the court in a supremacist society, a white supremacist society. The denial of rights, and we still have it today. Whites are understood to have natural rights. Blacks, Latinos, people of color generally derive their rights from a reconstructed and deconstructed constitution. We have two entirely different applications working at the same time, both coming from the same source. So don't get all flustered about this. This is a white supremacist society, an apartheid society, going through its tremors, having to do mostly with who within their closed world will have the majority of power and control. Has nothing to do about the law and the application of the law. I told you many times, the damage being done for the most part throughout America to people of color is in the lower courts. That's where the slaughter has been going on for years, for decades. So it boggles my mind that you have all these black people running around concerned, oh my God, what's going to happen at the Supreme Court? Don't worry about the Supreme Court. Worry about housing court. Worry about criminal court, bankruptcy court. Worry about local courts and what they are doing to people every single day. A case will come to the U.S. Supreme Court typically after years of percolating through the lower court system, bouncing here, bouncing there. The U.S. Supreme Court numerically does not handle even 1% of all the cases tried in the United States. And the cases that they hear, they elect to hear. They choose to hear. So not all cases are coming before the U.S. Supreme Court. So mathematically, you can see that it is structured in such a way that what percolates up to the U.S. Supreme Court for discussion at their choice, they choose cases that are of interest, would have gone through a whole, a myriad of tests at the lower court. This is what we should understand about the current situation. Exactly the same scenario that produced a Roger B. Taney as a Chief Justice is exactly the same scenario that is going through now. That's right. And we see all the earmarks of similarity. It's so startling that you just say, come on, that can't be true. Obviously, we have advanced, we have progressed as a society. The answer is no, we have not progressed. This nomination of the U.S. Supreme Court also brings with it a certain stench under Trump. Trump does nothing for altruism's sake. He's not motivated to do anything for the good of the country. What he is inclined most to do is to see to the interests of his class, and certainly, of course, first of all, himself. In this case, I suspect that there are hidden hands here, quote, advising him about Brett Kavanaugh making the perfect foil, the perfect chief justice, or just the perfect associate justice, because they're bought and paid for. And the role, maybe Kavanaugh knows it, maybe he doesn't. His role is to legislate accordingly, to rule accordingly. Now, they would deny all of this. They would say this is just a conspiracy theorist. You're just being unfair. I would say, okay. You know, you can say whatever you want. I'm saying, look at the evidence over time, and you tell me. You tell me when, since the founding of the U.S. Supreme Court, it has been as pure as the driven snow, totally absent of any political influence. Totally outside the clutches of the business class, the ruling class, the corporate class. You tell me whether there is no time in the history of the U.S. Supreme Court that it was as pure as the driven snow, with its mind set on only one purpose, and that is writing and interpreting the laws in such a way that it promotes a just society, equality in society. It's never been, it has never been the purpose of the U.S. Supreme Court. Ever. So you may think I'm being, in some cases, so contrarian. When everybody's talking about A, I'm saying that's not where your gaze should be. That's not where you pay your attention. Just like this. The Supreme Court, as people understand it today and accept it today, has nothing to do, or very, very little to do, with the aggregate interests of the people of this nation. Very little. And so I'm not upset about what's going on. I accept it as a natural consequence of a corrupt, totally messed up society reaching a point where it has to deal with its own contradictions, because that's how it's been operating all these years, on contradictions. You have people lifted up before the nation as a really wonderful example of manhood. Honest Abe and George, Jefferson, and Washington, and you name, and their slaveholders, child molesters, pederasts, child rapists. You see how bereft they are of actually human qualities. They cannot offer what they don't have. But they could slide. They could get away with it because it is understood that the compact between them and society excludes totally the interests and the needs of people of color in this country. This is white America. Everybody understands that, except people who are still willing to operate with delusions. This is white America. And if you doubt it, the next time you turn on your television and you look, just take a look, a gander, take a panoramic view of who is deciding how this country is going to be run. Who is deciding what will be the law? And tell me, you could count perhaps, if you're lucky, on one hand, people who look, you know, well, they're not white. The conversation is among them. Which brings me to the other part of the discussion today. And that is the craftiness of it all. Donald Trump, a man of marginal intellect, has acted in a way that has a whole nation focused on this process and on him. When we should be talking about the antidote to this process. The Democratic Party isn't doing it. The progressive parties aren't doing it. The Green Party isn't doing it. They keep arguing against the points made by the power elite. They haven't offered anything original. We had the spectacle, the sad and sorry spectacle, and it made me very angry, incidentally, of Michelle Obama now running around directing her attention to millennials and why they must vote. What are you voting for? What alternative plans and systems and structures have been offered by the Democratic Party that people can embrace and support? All they're doing is drumming up the vote. That's all they want to do. They too have become very sympathetic to the other side. They identify so closely with the other side. They see themselves as the ruling elite. They've done individually, they've done very, very well. Their terms in office have given them huge rewards that they never could have imagined. They're vacationing in the south of France and drinking Bordeaux, wearing designer clothes. And then they show up in the communities that are so stressed out that they have abandoned. There's no new idea hanging around at all that anybody could latch on to. There's no hope of new ideas. There's no energy to pursue new ideas and to take seriously the situation that the vast majority of their people are in this country. Look at what happened to Puerto Rico. Look what happened to Haiti. Look what is happening all throughout Africa. Look what is happening all throughout this nation. And they're arguing on irrelevant matters. What's relevant? Well, I'm not only going to say jobs, the usual. I'm going to say, what is the quality of life that you can assure the average Black and Latino family out here? You're telling people to vote, and you can't guarantee safe drinking water for children in Flint. So don't talk to me. You've been in office for 8 years, and people have given you what you asked for. And there is nothing that looks different except your plans to build a multi-million dollar monument to yourself on land in Chicago, where you get $10, you pay $10 for a 99-year lease. Don't talk to me about voting. This Democratic Party, in particular, has not cleansed itself of its own corruption. There are no new ideas. They all look to Mother Dear, Nancy Pelosi, who is half out of her mind. She makes a decision. She tells the Black leaders what to do. You think the U.S. Supreme Court and the shenanigans that the whites are doing to reorganize their world? That's their working. They're working at it. They're clear, and we should be, that that's not our concern. They're already clear. We own this country. We will rule this country. We will take this country. Sure, we'll fight among ourselves because we're thieves and crooks. And that's what thieves and crooks will do. So they're doing what comes naturally. But the main thing is that they are on course. Imagine since 1857 to now, Roger B. Taney's pronouncement has remained intact. Despite all the fighting and goings on. After he died and went his way, then the new one comes on and picks up from where he left off. They're not changing the agenda. In fact, quite the opposite. They are entrenching the agenda. The agenda is total obliteration of everybody else. And we're sitting around playing games, thinking that their fight is our fight. No, it never has been. It still is not. I want people to take a moment in the middle of all of this stuff, and we've gone through several cycles. Never go where everybody else is going. You have your own history. You have your own legitimate points of reference. And they're valid, and they are to be honored. You can't tell me what I'm supposed to think of the U.S. Supreme Court. We have it in writing. What we ought to think of the U.S. Supreme Court. We have it in writing. And it was written to apply specifically to us. Not to you, but to us. So we need to stay focused. We don't need to get all excited. Oh, the U.S. Supreme Court and the big struggle, that's their struggle. That's nothing to do with you. Your struggle is survival. It remains exactly what it was since the 1600s. It has not changed. And no matter the underhanded way that somehow people are preaching the idea and cultivating this idea that we're all one, we're all Americans. Well, you know, do I need to tell you what a stupid thing that is to say in light of evidence, in light of history, and in light of just plain logic? What precipitated the most recent problem, the great anxiety, is an unthinking and intellectually starved president. He went on a diet a long time ago, starving himself of intelligence. And his thinking, like those of years ago, is that as president, he could do whatever he wants to do. The fight really is not about whether Kavanaugh should be appointed, or, you know, why it is that there's so much tumult and chaos. We talked about that first day. I called him President Chaos. That's what he knows. The fight is to control the assets of the country, maintain them in certain hands. Donald Trump didn't decide that this guy should be a Kavanaugh, should be an associate justice. Other people decided that for him and gave Trump the assignment to get it done, which is why he tried to ramrod this nomination through. Any logical mind would know, and if you don't know, you talk to people who do know, that there's a process. But so willful, so blatantly disregarding of their own traditions, they have to move fast to get this thing done. There's a lot riding on this U.S. Supreme Court nomination. Unfortunately, he got tripped up. But it was Trump who precipitated this whole thing by failing to follow the norms in their world. You want to nominate somebody? There's a way to do it. But because you have a very, very sick ego, you absolutely believe that, hey, all you need to do is, it's like in the Ten Commandments movie, so let it be written, so let it be done. Yul Brynner as Ramses. So let it be written, so let it be done. Trump thinks that, you know, he has come in to take over that role, that Hollywood role. So let it be written, so let it be done. No. They're fighting over form. They're fighting over how brazen Trump is to totally set aside and run right through like a ruffian. The ruffian that he is. He's a man of very few social graces. And he started it. And now it has blossomed into this crazy battle. And now we're getting into discussions of who sexually assaulted whom. And these things should not be part of a discussion of a nominee. At this stage, absolutely not. This should have been cleared away separately And from the very beginning, the work should have been done to vet, thoroughly vet Kavanaugh, and to see that at least on basic level, he passes the smell test. And then you proceed with all the other routines that are followed in this process. But that's not what Trump did. And I suspect Trump actually set him up. And he will learn that really soon. Trump is going to drop this man like a hot boiled egg. He's going to drop him. And life will go on. That another candidate produced by the unseen hands will probably show up. And they will start this process all over again, pretending to adhere to, quote, the law, unquote. But we should not be concerned about it. This is not our business. It is not our business as people of color in this country. Our business has been, continues to be, about survival. And the sad thing is that although so many attempts have been made over so many years to create something of an infrastructure, something of a base, and all of that energy given to the Democratic Party, I think it is not incorrect or inaccurate to say that all of that energy did a lot for whites in this country. White leadership did very well. It did remarkably well for the Clintons. It made multimillionaires, whether Republican or Democrat. But what I'm saying is there is no system, and they're still telling us that the only answer is to vote. And they're wrong, and they're lying, and they know it. The answer isn't just to vote. The answer is to create systems of governance that you control. The answer is to create systems that speak to and meet your needs and your community's needs. The answer is to dump these people who, in effect, inevitably become traitors. And we create these monsters over and over and over again, and they present to us the simplistic understanding, the simplistic idea that all you have to do is vote. How stupid do they think people are? What contempt do they have for our intellect? So I'll take this break, and then we'll come to your thoughts right afterwards at 888-874-4888. Go Elvin. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead on PRN.FM, and we're talking about the state of affairs today. And we're just getting into it. There's so much more to say, but we can't get it all said in one fell swoop. So we'll do pieces of it at a time. I'm just interested in you understanding and coming to the conclusion that what we are told is very, very different from what history says. And do we go with what we are told? Are we awaiting instruction? Are we functioning on false instruction? Or do we have a better way to go? Desiree from Maine, what are you saying?
Hi, Utrice.
Hello.
Hi. I haven't called in a while. I was originally Desiree from New York, and I've been here in Maine. And I had some time today to call, and I wanted to express how everything you said right before the break very much is what I've been coming to understand since being here, and being here even more. Community is so important. And I've been here on a homestead, and the original idea of this homestead was to be able to supply and not consume and not buy and be a consumer. Supply as much of your food and as much of your living as possible from the land that you have. And I haven't heard much news, and you're the first thing that I've heard in months in being here, but I want to say that that kind of livelihood really speaks to me, and it speaks to a lot of the callers who call in on your show. And I'd like to say that there are two farms that are in New York City. One is called Soul Fire Farm, and they're an activist farm in New York, and they work with Black and Brown communities. And they work with activism and showing and learning and teaching our people how to farm and how to be self-sufficient. And another farm is called White Pine Community Farm that I'll be going to in January. And they're an herbal farm that work with communities in the Bronx, teaching again how to live holistically, how to, you know, supply your own medicine, take care of yourself, and educating our communities and how to be more educated on what the system doesn't want you to know. So I thought I'd share.
What is your reaction to the issue in the news, the big issue in the news today?
Oh gosh, that's why I called into your show, because I have not been keeping up with the news at all. So I'll let you take another call.
Thank you, Desiree, for calling in. Thank you very much. 888-874-4888. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yusuf. How are you
Hello.
Doing?
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yes,
hello,
thank you.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with you. I've been saying the same thing. This has nothing at all to do with us. What we should be doing is basically just what you said, doing what we need to do for ourselves. Just like the Nation of Islam. They have no interest in what they're doing. They're doing what they choose to do and what they want to do. Simple. They're racist. Yeah, they're anti-Semitic. Whatever you want to say they are, that's fine. But we're doing what we want. We have decided is best for us. That's it. Imagine, you know, the other day we were talking about Tiger Woods. 130 million that his wife took. Imagine you had given that kind of money to the nation. You know, do you know how many of our people that could be helped in North Carolina and all over the world? But we're busy trying to integrate into a society that has no use for us. We
Let
are
me
the
ask
problem, not them.
How do you see, if you were to give us really, really fast analysis, a quick shot at it, as to what this is all about in your mind? What is it all about?
Yusuf, I have, to be honest with you, many years ago, I would study these things, but I've learned it's a waste of time. This is none of our business. It has nothing to do with us. So So, you know, I don't know anything about it, don't care nothing about it. All I'm interested in is what we are doing for ourselves. That's it.
What do you think we are doing for ourselves? How are we functioning in that regard?
Well, individually, we are doing very well because we do have a lot of money. But collectively, we're begging for everything that we should provide for ourselves. We should have our own schools, our own farms, our own trucking, everything. We should have hospitals for ourselves. You can't look to a people who has destroyed you, who has enslaved you, to take care of you. That's insanity, in my judgment.
Well, I think that's sound judgment, by the way, and it is logical. And that is why I'm so fascinated by the fact that so many people are suspending the work that they ought to be doing individually and collectively, and waiting for instructions as to what to do from the people who are doing them in, looking to them for solutions.
I mean, this is really, really a sad situation, because when you take a God and make them into a no people, that's a tremendous task. Because we are a no people. There are some of us that sees ourselves as nobody, nothing. How do you take a people from a God to make him into a no people? Are you still looking to those people for leadership? That's a tremendous task that they have accomplished.
Thanks, Willie, for your call.
Okay, my sister.
You know, what we must do is change our attitudes. We really need, this is the time when things are becoming more and more critical. This is the time to react as if we understand it is critical. And therefore, we signal to parties, political parties that represent us and other leaders, quote unquote, who represent us. We don't have any more patience with this ridiculous phony leadership. We're not going to tolerate it. And we have to make that very clear. We have to state unequivocally that they are not functioning, not even at the medium level. They are at the low level and sometimes at no level at all. I mean, I remembered talking about Puerto Rico. We had a court hearing in Puerto Rico, in San Juan. The real estate interests were there. The banks were there. You know, the developers were there. The Puerto Ricans were not there. Their representatives were not there. There was a follow-up meeting in Manhattan Federal Court. Nobody representing the people was there to discuss how they're dividing up or how they plan to divide up Puerto Rico, a whole island. Now, on the basis of that alone, some people should be immediately thrown out of office. With this distressed nation, people are dying for lack of care and for lack of necessities. And there is nobody in the court, not even ceremonially, representing the interests of the people of the island. There were two opportunities to do that. It did not happen. That is so unacceptable to me. Immediately, there should have been a call for the resignation of all these people who walk around with portfolios saying that they represent the island of Puerto Rico. You don't represent anything. Well, I'm watching the clock, and it says it's time to go. Thank you so much for listening today. We will watch this process, but as you watch it, remember there are two histories here. The history that they're seeing too, and the history that they're operating on is not the history of America. We have an entirely different experience that isn't even recognized, let alone acknowledged, and used as a way to formulate a way forward as a nation. They have no intention of referencing the experiences of people of color in this country. Watch that hearing, and you tell me whether that looks like the America that you want, or is that the America they know? Thanks so much for listening. We'll join each other again tomorrow. Bye-bye.